Welcome to the Lost and Found Wellness Podcast. I've always felt that being lost was a problem. Everyone knows their why and their purpose. Everyone else has their shit figured out. But I'm not qualified enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not fit enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not worthy. These things made me feel behind and lost. But feeling lost is not the problem. It's a sign towards a new situation, a chance to get creative, to build resilience and a chance to connect with yourself and the world around you. You are adaptable. You are brave. You are safe. And you are loved. So if you're feeling lost in where you are in your life, you've found the right podcast.
Episode of Lost AF Wellness, and today we are joined with Jennifer Powder. She helps women break free from the vicious cycle of yo-yo dieting and lose weight for good. Jen, Paula, and I all bonded on our love-hate relationship in the yo-yo dieting cycles, so we're very excited to have Jen on with us as we've somewhat broken free and still somewhat struggle. But Jen has founded the Weight Loss Academy. She's coached over 1,000 women. She's written a best-selling book, The Diet Disruption, which I've started reading, and it's wonderful. It's available on Audible. She leads live events and has interviewed more than 50 health and wellness expert. So Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us and just sharing your wealth of knowledge and experience with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I did my favorite topic. it's like near and dear to my heart. So yes, I'm excited to dive in.
I think the thing that intrigued me the most about your story is you have a background in like exercise physiology and nutrition and coaching and all of that. And your weight struggles happened after all of that. So it's like you've gone through the training of the things that people think that you should have, right, to avoid this kind of a thing, and it still found its way into your life. And that really resonated with myself. That's been part of like imposter syndrome things that I've gone through of like, oh my gosh, I'm struggling with this. How could I coach anybody else on it? Even though I have helped people with it, right? But it kind of turns into that self-doubt. And then also just working in the fitness industry for so long with coaches and having it on both ends of, you know, people that look amazing in, you know, everyone else's eyes or, you know, the industry's standards, right? But they're miserable in some ways. And then people who, you know, aren't happy and fulfilled or look a certain way and then are. So it's just, it's a lot of the opposite of what you're coached in the industry.
100%. And I think to like, so that for me, you know, I had 2 degrees. I'd been an Ironman athlete, multi-marathoner, had run dozens of pushed myself to, you know, unlike so many women, I probably thought I had 5 pounds to lose. And I think I'm so blessed to have had that whole experience because it allowed me to truly understand it so much deeper than just the food. It is so much deeper than just eat this, move like this, and the complex social, emotional reasons that we turn to food and or, you know, for me, wine, to deal with life. And I never in a million years would have identified back then as an emotional eater ever, because my main meals were pretty good. You know, it was all the other stuff I did between those meals and at night that, well, and also the state of complete unhappiness I was in, but denying, I was in denial about it. So I remember just thinking, why is this happening to me? And like, God help other women. Like, I even know what to do and I still can't do it. Like, what is up?
That's been a lot of what we talk about because, like I said, we were bonded together sort of in our addiction to diets. Like, okay, let's try this one next. Let's try this one next. And let's try this one. And so, yeah, it's like going through a lot of those. I don't think any of us can look at a plate and not think about the carbs, protein, fat, you know, contents that are on it and how many grams of this and that, but still having those struggles every once in a while. Like, I know what I should be doing according to this diet or this program, and I'm not able to be consistent with those things, or I felt good at a time. And so it's like that's what kind of hit home in your book a little bit of some of the failures that you experience is actually, it kind of works in your favor because it's helping you discover what doesn't work for you. So like things work for a little bit of time, but then they stop working. And so it's like, what's that all about? And I know this is what we were just talking about before you came on was you kind of hit that panic when you don't get a result and that feeds that anxiety and that loop of like, I need to do something to get a quick fix. And that's what leads you to this $70 billion industry of pills, cleanses, supplements, and short-term fixes.
The desperation, right? It's the desperation. Mm-hmm. And the diet industry knows, that's the thing. It's like we women are so hard on themselves, and they think it's them, that they're the failure, they're the problem, that there must be like this lack of inner commitment, resolve, discipline, you name it. We've beat ourselves up about it. Except all of those things are designed for you to fail. That's why there isn't a 365-day cleanse. Like, no one could do that. It's a 7-day cleanse. So we think, oh, okay, I can do anything for 7, 14, maybe 21 days, whole 30. But at the same time, we're living life. And I just feel like we just need to really start to have a deeper conversation about what's going on. It's not just food deep. It's, it's for me, and I hope I can go here. It's like, I always say to women who are in the academy or who I'm, talking to see if I can help them. It's like, you got to be ready to heal. And it's a healing. Can we feel the feelings we haven't wanted to feel? Can we start to not stuff things down, but actually let them bubble up and then learn new coping mechanisms? And in many ways, a 7-day cleanse feels more appealing,
just 7 days.
Yeah. It's like, what? I don't want to open Pandora's box. And, I work with women, typically over 40. And by the time you hit that age, I know everybody's different ages here, but you've gone through some hard. I don't know a woman really who hasn't gone through some hard, whether it was when you were a child and how you were raised, whether it was shit that happened in your teenage year, divorce, financial crisis, job losses, death. We go through some hard, and often we're alone while we're going through it, even if there's people around us.
Do you think that people think that they're dealing and they're just not? Because I guess I feel like, I've had a pretty rough year this last year, and I feel like I've got like a pretty good grasp on it. And then I talk to the girls and they're like, yeah, you don't.
In a loving way.
Gotta love friends like that. Jen, oh my gosh, it's such a great question. I think every woman's like, oh, what's she gonna say? What I have found is we heal to the point that we can continue to survive but not thrive. So we will do the best we can to just simply keep on making it through, and we get really good at acclimating to just barely getting by, and we fail to take those next steps to allow ourselves to thrive. And so that's what I've seen a lot of is women, we're so amazing. Let's be honest, like women are like, the creatures, we're amazing. But we carry so much and that emotional load that a lot of times we engage in more numbing and distraction by staying busy, handling it all, doing more, saying yes when we should say no, be saying no by taking on more when we should be delegating or deleting. So I think that, and then we get praised for it. You got to remember, we get praised for all of these things. Oh, you're so amazing. I don't know how you do. And then you're imploding on the inside, but you keep it together on the outside. And so I don't know for you, but I do know that there's a lot of just getting by. And then I just think the messages keep coming. There's messages. There's health scares. I just had a client who had a doctor's appointment and she was scared, or somebody else in your life gets sick, or there's a tragedy, and then you're like, oh, wait a minute, wait, I gotta what about me? Like, that's usually where women are when they talk to me, is like, I don't want to be on this path anymore. I don't know how to get off of it. I want to get off of it, but I don't know what else to do, because how else do you lose weight if you're not dieting? It's like, what do you do?
Well, I think there's so much information out there nowadays too, where, you just don't know. And, I'm 50, just turned 53. So it's just like, I've been through every diet there is known to man, because I've been overweight my whole life. But, so it's just like, what do I do? Well, this worked at this time. I tried intermittent fasting. I've done keto. So I'm like, oh, it's not really working anymore. So now what do I do? So it's just so confusing. It's just like, you just kind of throw your hands up there and say, what the F, and where do you start? It's just like,
totally.
And I just keep gaining, even though I'm doing the same thing, I keep gaining weight. I'm like, well, what word? You get frustrated and you're like, screw it. I'm going to go home and drink a liter of whiskey and a pizza.
Yeah, because you're a good person, right? You deserve to be happy. Yeah. And that's just it. You're like, F it. Like, exactly that. Yeah. These things that have come out, keto was never meant to be, you're supposed to cycle keto in 5 to 6 week cycles. So the problem is we actually go into this thinking it's supposed to be a long-term solution. And the way, that's why I say, I don't have a diet dogma that I follow. I just follow the basic principles of fat metabolism and good nutrition. And then we have to make it your lifestyle. The best scientific plan in the world means if you don't like it, don't think you can do it, or it's too hard. It, you know, and so a lot of times the women have been put into places where it's all nothing, binge, restrict. The restriction gets so hard. You know, you're living off of lettuce and eggs and chicken and you're like, whiskey, pizza, yes, please. And then you eat that for like a month or whatever. And then your pants are tight and you think, oh my God. So then you search for the next thing. And that's where the protein shakes or the pills. I just had somebody doing, there's an injection in the States that is getting a lot of money thrown at it for marketing. And we start to do things, but we look for the solution outside of ourselves and not inside of ourselves. And really, that's what I want to help women do. It's the solution isn't in a thing out there. It's in here, because wherever we go, there we are with our thoughts and our heart. And we got to get those. We got to heal. We got to get that stronger or in alignment or just in a positive, more positive space, which after the last couple of years, you know, I think there's millions of women that need help with that right now.
Well, and I think now too, we kind of talked before we came on that we're all different. We've all got this emotional, chaotic life right now in all different ways. And, you know, I know Jen and I specifically are just, you know, sorry, Jen, but we just keep gaining weight. And we're like, I'm kind of eating the same. I mean, yeah, I have my meals, bad meals here and there, but for the most part, I'm doing okay. But I keep, every time I step on the scale, it's going up. And I'm like, and I'm exercising. Is it emotions? I don't know. But, you know, yeah. I'm in the process of moving and I'm, you know, transitioning my job. I've been without my husband for 7 years. I mean, we live apart. We're married, but still live apart. So, and moving back with him now, I got all these like, oh God, what's it going to be like? God, we've been apart for 7 years. Oh my God, we're going to be living together again. You know, so there's just a lot of that going on. Maybe, I don't know. Is that
Are both of you like 5'4" or under? How tall are you?
I'm 5'2".
So you're tiny.
I'm 5'7".
So 5'7". So yeah, Polly, you may find that like, you are. Weight. You might find that weight comes on so quickly and takes forever to leave. Okay.
Yes.
That's your height. This is a physiological thing. Okay. So that is going to, you're a kitty cat and you probably don't know it, but you are, you're tiny. That's one of the things in my books, right? You're a kitty cat living in a lion sized world, right? Everything is portioned for lions. Your husband might eat like a lion. You may, anytime you go to a restaurant, it's a lion size. So even like that is like such new information for so many women. And I, you know, Jen, I obviously don't know, you're not under 5'4", but I find for so many women, that's a relief. And even for women who you can just get accustomed to a way of eating that's just beyond what your perfect body can handle. It's just beyond that. A little bit, enough, consistently to just make it hard. And I think, Megan, you said that word. The consistency is the generator of healthy fat loss. 4 days. How many people are really great Monday to Thursday? By Thursday night, you're like, wine, please. Right? Then you've got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then you buckle up and you're like, okay, let's go. Monday to Thursday. That 4 days, three days, it puts you into diet purgatory. Like trying so hard and getting nowhere. It's, you know, in Canada, it's like a car stuck in the ditch in the snow. It's like, you're so frustrated. So if that's, you know, so pay attention, because there's always going to be like, I've never yet not been able to help someone because I just can see what people can't see. You're in it. I'm objective to it.
Yeah. That's a huge piece. I think, yeah, getting that outside. Like, and that was something you mentioned in your book is like, I am a coach, but I hired a coach. I am a life coach, but I hired a life coach. I have, you know, like we need that accountability or that person. I think that is just very objective. And like your friends are great, but we've also talked about this. Like we're enablers sometimes.
Yes.
Like, stroke the ego a little bit. I'm like, it's okay, honey. Like, you know, and there's sometimes the tough love, but then there's, you know, it's just, it's not the coach relationship that
can't be. No, I don't coach my friends. Like as my girlfriend, you know, like, can you imagine? I'd have no friends. My gosh. And this, you know, I was at a friend's house and, you know, she follows a keto when she wants to lose weight. When she doesn't, she gains weight. And, she, you know, and like, I love her. Mm. And she's made this chicken hot sauce keto dip with, I watched it this time because I had it once and I was like, oh, that's really good. She's like, oh, it's keto, you can have as much as you want. And I'm like, so it's a full brick of cream cheese. Yeah, a full brick of cream cheese.
I know which one you're talking about.
The full thing of mozzarella cheese. You can't eat as much of that as you want. Are you kidding? like I was, you know, and then her weight went up 30 pounds. And so I say, I don't say a word, right? It's like, yeah, no, it's hard.
Exactly.
No,
so true though.
Yeah,
so
true. But there always is a way out. And I think, you know, what I talk about my mom a little bit, and I said this on my Facebook Live the other day, which just got to a woman. I said, you know, she's now in her 80s and she's in a wheelchair. My mom's had poor health since her 70s. She could never look after my kids, couldn't babysit. And I was like, if my mom had made a powerful choice in her 50s or early 60s, she could have completely changed the trajectory of her life and her retirement. And so I always think it is so brave to come at it one more time, you know, like to just go, okay, I've got a different future. I know it's waiting for me. I get to create it. Maybe I don't totally know how, so maybe I'll find help, but I know that this is my forever vehicle and I want to have a really great experience in it for the rest of my life. You know, for me, that was such a powerful thing was I was 40 pounds overweight, you guys. Like that's not, I was five, you know, that's a lot. That's a lot. I had one pair of fat pants, one pair of black Lululemon pants. That's all that fit me. The still wide leg capri pants. I burned them. I hated them.
I love it. We were just talking about that too, though, with our, a little bit of like our moms and how they dealt with diets and weight and things like that. And they just also didn't talk about weight and some of these things like that they struggled with. Or like, Jen, you brought that up with your mom and you were like, she just, you know, I think she struggled with probably a lot of these, you know, different like emotional things, you know, of being a mom and working and, you know, marriage and all kinds of stuff. And then it's like, but they never really like talked about those things.
Other than the fact that I feel like she was so, it was almost like a panicky thing from her perspective that she didn't want me to go through what she did. And so it was almost like a, so my mom, I mean, like she's always worried about her weight, but it was almost like the most important thing to her was that I didn't go through the same experiences that she did. And so it was almost like it was a hyper focus on that for me. And I feel like in some ways it almost made it worse. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Like the thing with daughters, and I write this I forget which book, but I say daughters are always watching their moms for the verbal and the nonverbal. And, you know, my clients have had some of their moms take them to Weight Watchers at the age of 10 or start to give them their diet pills. And instead of having the focus be about health or strength, there's the fear that it's the fat shaming. It's this fear that you're going to be fat and I don't want you fat like me. So then it implies that there's something wrong. And the fear creates exactly what you don't want created because that's what's being focused on. And so, and then, you know, any kind of those messages are so deep for little girls and we carry those messages as adult women, you know? And so even you knowing that, like recognizing that, I mean, I'd highly recommend doing some journaling because here's the thing that little, you know, in my world, I believe that like there's all parts of us that can still exist, right? So that little girl who was so getting this energy of, oh my gosh, there's something inherently possibly wrong with me because I better not end up like that because there's something wrong, but I love her. Wait a minute. I can't, you know, it'd be worth going back to that little girl and just doing some reparenting and being like, you know, this wasn't your fault. Everything you did was right. This is okay. And like, because she needs soothing and your mom couldn't give her that.
Well, and I feel like, it came from such a good place. And I think that's the other piece of it too. And I know Megan has talked about that with her mom as well, is that it comes from such a good place that you don't want to say anything bad about mom. Because, you know, she just didn't, you know, she just doesn't want you to feel the same, go through those same experiences and get made fun of and all of the things that go with being overweight. So, you know, it's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
And so that's what makes it kind of hard.
I hear you on that. My mom, you know, I always say there's two parts to everything that we get, you know, everything in our life. There's the intention of someone and then there's the actual impact. The intention can be good, well-meaning, even loving, if you will, but the impact or the way it happened, the impact is less than or different than what the actual intention was. And that's where, you know, there's so much compassion and empathy needed for both our moms or aunts and for ourselves. You know, and I think so many women just, instead of getting loving with themselves, they get hard and mean, like that mean voice in our head can just run rampant. And all that does, you know, all that does is make us want to escape those horrible feelings. And the best way to do that's with brownies or cookie, you know, like it's just, you can easily start off your own emotional eating cycle by just that voice in your head.
It's funny because my mom, I've been very extremely fortunate. My mom has never said, I've been overweight since kindergarten. In fact, I mentioned it before in other podcasts, but other episodes, that I was pulled out of kindergarten by a dietitian and basically said I was fat. So that has been, I never realized it made such an impact until I look back on it. But my mom never, she was always fit and in shape, but she had never said anything to me about my weight growing up. So, but I think still going back, you know, in high school, I never had a boyfriend, never went to prom, you know, never really dated. So I think, you know, going back to that 5-year-old, you know, it's like, it's because I was fat.
I'm so sorry that happened.
Well, no, it's just, I mean, I met an amazing man and married for 28 years, but still there was those impressionable years, junior high and high school, where I always thought it's because I was fat. I never had a boyfriend because I was fat. I mean, I wore a size 10, 12. I wasn't too fat, you know, a little chunky, but I wouldn't say fat, but in my mind I was, you know, so I think, yeah.
It's hard. And it gets more, I don't think, the thing that I find troubling, I guess, is that it gets more complicated as we get older, not less, because we do more and more things. And then you, I don't know about you ladies, but like everything you do, you may find that you go more extreme each time, because if what you didn't work before, well, now you got to take it to the next level. And then you take it to the next level and then that doesn't work. And then you lose your steam. And the idea of trying to do this again, you think, oh my gosh, how extreme do I need to go to get this to work? It's just not worth it. And so there's this whole thing around this extremes and women wanting weight loss, you know, women wanting weight loss fast, like just get it off. And instead, if we could actually just give ourselves a container to be patient in, consistent in, you know, you could, you know, here's the thing, the years go by, but what you can create in a year is so powerful versus what you create in a week on, week off for decades at a time. So I just had a client lose 70 pounds, you know, 71 pounds from January to January. She's 54. She feels like she has a new lease in life, you know? So it's, you're never too old, you're never too late. And a year passes, exactly, Jen. The time's going to pass anyways.
You know? So how do you recommend somebody starting, like in our situation? Just, you know, starting habits
So I'm going to make the comparison to money. Okay. So like money. So first of all, like has everybody, you know, in my world, like money stories. Okay. I grew up with money stories. My mom was like a single mom, Jen, money doesn't grow on trees. You know, what do you think I am? Made of money, money, money can't buy happiness. So I made a decision really early in my life. I'd rather be happy than have money. Right. So first of all, I had to become aware of all of these like crazy limiting subconscious beliefs that I had about money. Then I needed to learn how to budget, how to not view it as deprivation. Like my job was my job. I had this much money. If I went into a mall, there might be 10 things I want, but if I have goals, I can't get all 10 things. That's not deprivation. That is acting in my highest ability to get to where I want most, not just get what I want most in the moment. So I think it's really the same with weight loss. It is, we really do need an education that it's not coming from a dieting perspective. And that's the hard part. We're not taught this. Like we're just not taught it. And I work with really smart women, surgeons, lawyers, like accountants, like just smart dieticians, holistic nutritionists, you know, because trainers, but we're not taught about it. And so you need to start to go, okay, I need to start to understand food, not from a dieting perspective, but what's food? What is a serving? How much? What is a serving? It's not how much I take, or maybe that's a serving, that's a portion. And knowing that there's carbs, there's proteins and fats, just like there's 20s, 50s, and 100s. Each one has a different impact on your body. Each one is required in a different amount for good nutrition. The starve yourself all day, eat all night technique doesn't work. We're not metabolically designed to run that way. And so I think it's like set a long-term goal, not a short-term one, and get some support. I really do. Having done so many hard things in my life, every time I'm successful, I've had someone helping me be successful. Almost every time.
Accountability.
Yeah. We let ourselves off the hook. Wow. We chase Monday. And then we chase months. Well, I'll start again in January. Wow. You know what? It's going to be Christmas. It's going to be like my birthday, Valentine's Day, Easter, spring break. I'll start again in June. Oh, it's barbecue season, potlucks, back. Yep. I'll start again in September. Oh, it's back to school. Oh my God. You know? But this is exactly the thing. How it goes. This is life. That's what it means to be alive, is all of these things are going to happen week in, week out. And so we got to learn to live. And still, I mean, I eat and drink whatever I want, but I understand the impact of it. So it's not like I live off of some blue green algae and raw nuts. You know, like sometimes people think that you like, I'm like, I drink wine. I like Prosecco, but I just don't do it. I do it now with consciousness, not as a desire to escape. It's so different the way I eat.
Yeah. There's a lot of that, of like slowing down was a big way for me, I think, to understand portion size so much. Like I've been very lucky. Like I haven't done a whole lot of fitness, we'll say, compared to like my previous lifestyle when I was like running gyms and everything. I was working out like up to 8 hours a day sometimes. Like it was ridiculous. But with taking that away, I've been able to maintain a certain weight just for me, the nutrition stuff, because I grew up the beliefs were, you know, again, money doesn't grow on trees kind of thing. So eat everything on your plate. Otherwise, it's going to waste. And we worked hard to put that on the plate. So there was that. And then there was also like, hurry up and eat before your next race. Hurry up and eat before practice. Hurry up and eat before your next class. Like, you know, that rushing. So it took me like slowing down. But that was often a question I'd have to ask myself of, you know, like reaching for the wine and the chocolate bar, which I still, you know, find myself some nights. I like grab it just kind of like unconsciously. And then I'm like, what's this about? Are you bored? Are you stressed? Are you upset? What conversation did you just have? Or do you genuinely want to enjoy a glass of wine with your dinner? Like, which is it? Like, how many glasses are we going to have tonight?
That's so powerful there. Yeah. Like, that's so, like, that, but it takes work to do it, by the way. Like, you know, so when you're stressed out.
I had to set timers for, like, slowing down to eat. I had to, like, there was a lot of feedback that went to it. And we've been reading the book Atomic Habits, which I think gives a little bit more insight to kind of the conscious and subconscious parts of our behaviors, which I know is something that you talk about in your book as well, is what drives those behaviors for us.
It's huge. For every action we take, there's a cue and a trigger to stimulate that action, right? And the thing is sometimes we do make decisions, but then we just repeat them over time and it becomes a habit. So for me, I was sad in my marriage. I was tired with two little kids. I was building a company. And so my habit was just, I would put the kids to bed, come upstairs, go to the cupboard, get the red wine, get the glass, get the chocolate, right? Like it was just, I had this great, it was effortless, you know, like I didn't even have to think. And then when I switched that, when I finally had my breakdown moment, like, and I think this does come, you know, it's like a breakdown moment for me. I was like, oh my gosh, like I have got to get so real with myself. Like, what am I doing? And I knew, see, here's the thing. I also think women are smart. We know what to do. I've led lots of live events when I say, hey, tell me the top five things you think you could do to help you lose weight. I mean, everyone tells me, you know, but there's knowing and there's doing. And you know, my second book, Stop Sabotaging Your Weight Loss, was all about the space in between the knowing and the doing. And there's a lot of space in there for some of us. And I had to recognize what was my self-sabotage all about. And it was, part of me liked staying stuck, quite frankly. I liked my glass of wine. I liked not facing my stuff. I liked not dealing with my problems until I didn't. And, you know, it opened up another path for me in my life. It wasn't the easiest path to go on. It was the most purposeful and fulfilling path, but it felt hard at times, you know? But so was having one pair of pants to wear every day. So sometimes you got to choose our hard. Like, you know, like, that was really hard. Waking up and I'd feel my stomach and I'd, you know, have nothing to wear. I'd try five things on and rip them all off and go back to the same clothes I'd wore the day before and the day before that, you know? It wasn't pretty, you guys.
What would you say was your moment that when you decided that it wasn't?
So, Megan, I think you'll like this. So, because with my exercise background, back then, 11 years ago, you know, there was a huge move more, eat less, just move more, eat less. Like, so I thought having done Ironman, clearly that would be the extreme that I would need to go to again. I would need to do an Ironman triathlon. So I hauled my post, met a 9-month-old. She was just a year. I signed up for Ironman Canada in September. And then I started training. I had stress-induced exercise incontinence, which meant I peed when I ran. My boobs were heavy and leaking. My body, every part of me jiggled as I tried to run. And it was finally December. And it was miserably cold, Jen. It was so cold. And I was the back of the pack. I'd never been the back of the pack. I was the back of the pack, but not just a little. Like, I couldn't see anyone. And it was so cold. There was no one else on this path. And My tights were soaked and freezing to my skin. My tears were falling down my face. And this stupid triathlon coach, God, he was so handsome. And he comes sprinting back to me like a gazelle, like just like this effortless deer. And he's like, hey, Jen, just checking in, you know, how's everything going? And I wanted to punch him. Like, seriously, I had this rage inside me where I was like, but instead I did my nice girl face. Oh, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. You go. I'll be back to the store soon. And he left. He left me. He left this middle. He left me. And I was like, well, I told him to go. What do you expect? I was having this conversation with myself about what a jerk he was. I'm like, yeah, but you told him to go. And then I just dropped to my knees and I bawled and I cried and I cried and I cried and I couldn't. I didn't even take it. I just walked back. I got into the store. I like was so cold. I looked at him. I'm like, I quit. And he just sort of looked at me with, I'll never forget. His arms were folded and he tilted his head and he was like 24, you know, like zero skills. And he's like, yeah, probably a good idea.
Oh man, he's like, yeah, I'm not equipped for this.
Like my eyes were puffy, and then I went home and I showered and I cried. I feel like I cried for like what must have felt like 2 days, but it was on that pathway that I was like, oh, there must be a better way. Like I was like looking to the sky and I heard there is, but you're on the wrong path. You're on the wrong path. And so that's when I threw myself back into the research. I threw myself back into, okay, how can we know things? I threw myself into neuroscience, started to study self-sabotage way back then. Emotional. What is this? What is this emotional eating thing people are talking about? And then I was like, I think they're talking about me. So I have so much compassion, you know, like I cry every day. I have so much compassion because of who I was and my pain and the just not knowing what to do, but knowing I couldn't do the stupid Ironman training anymore. You know, I was getting heavier too. That was the other part. I was so, God, I'm hungry after trying to train like that. My children were latched onto boobs. You know, I was just like, this is all wrong. Like, this is not working. So
did you find what was not working for you was the nutrition and whatnot? And because I know that you were talking about that it's more than the food. It's the emotions. It's the other things that are going on. So what was it
yeah.
for you?
Yeah. So I really, when I chose to get really real with myself, I mean, I was a smart cookie. I mean, I was doing all this behavior, but I did well in school. And I was like, okay, well, wine, calories in a glass of wine, calories in a chocolate chip. Oh, I'm having four of those a night each. Okay, well, that's about 1,000 calories. Doing that weekly, there's a pound of fat right there. Like I just, oh, I got a latte machine, like an espresso machine. I was having 2 to 3 lattes a day. That's like the equivalent of eating 3 pieces of bread minimum because it's just milk. So 3 lattes, couple glasses of wine, not to mention all of the little handfuls and extras and overeating that I was doing consistently enough that I wasn't, you know, totally gaining a lot of weight, but I certainly wasn't budging. And so I knew that hardcore exercise, been there, tried that, that wasn't going to be the answer. So then I had to go, okay, well, kind of like Megan, why am I eating this at night? What's this about? What does it feel like if I don't do it? What could I do instead? And I just felt like I lived my life, you know, it took me less than a year to lose that weight. And I actually did end up doing that stupid race. but I felt like I was wearing an itchy sweater for the entire year. So uncomfortable with my thought. It was like I had a spotlight on myself. And I was like, I'm lonely in my marriage. Oh my God, I'm so lonely. Because it was like, once I knew it, I couldn't unknow it. And that meant I would have had to deal with it. My mom was really ill. I didn't want to take care of her. I felt like burnt out being a single, you know, so basically at that point I was married, but living as a single mom. And so it was like, okay, I'm not healthy. I'm not doing things the right way here. And I got a coach. I got somebody to help me see and gave me tools. Like I'd heard about meditation. I like totally poo-pooed it. I was like, that's for other people. I'm too busy. You know, I'd heard about journaling. Like everyone, every guru, Wayne Dyer, Oprah, Byron Katie, they all tell you to do this stuff. I was like, I don't need that. Like I was so arrogant. I was like, and I hadn't even tried any of it. So I used all the tools and then I spent the last decade creating more to help women who are just like me.
Well, I think people want the easy stuff too. Like it's hard to do that stuff. It's hard to look yourself in the mirror and whatnot. And I always remember I've told the girls in the past that when I was actively treating with an endocrinologist, I had lost about 80 pounds in an attempt to deal with a brain tumor I had. But my endocrinologist had asked me, she goes, I need to ask you a question because the bulk of her practice is diabetics. I was an endocrine patient, but she said the bulk of my patients are diabetics. She goes, what did you do? Can I talk to you about what you did to lose all this weight? Because she said, most of my patients just want the pill because they deserve the donut. So they just want the pill because the pill allows them to eat the donut. And so I think it's a lot easier to take the pill. It's a lot easier than to just acknowledge what the problem is.
Well, and this is why, you know, I think, yeah, Jen, I mean, who doesn't like things easy? Except they don't work. So when you keep trying mm-hmm. to take the easy route and then you keep having repeated failure, at some point we have to go, I keep telling myself this is easy, but my whole experience around this is hard. And I think this is where I get to differ from a therapist and a physician. I say things to people that a physician and therapist probably don't say. Like, I'm able to call you, like I'm able to say things to you. I tell you what I see and I can do it with love. But there's enough people who you can bullshit with in your life and they're just going to take it. Oh, okay, yeah. And I'm like, can we just talk about what you just said here? Like, you know, and I can go deeper. And I think that I always tell my clients, I'm really nice, but I'm a hard coach, but you'll win. So if you want to win, you know, and you can take some feedback and you know it's in service of your highest self, like no one needs to be told, oh, you know what? Just try harder. Because we've been trying for decades and it's insulting almost. So I
think that's, yeah, we get so good at justifying and rationalizing things for ourselves too that it can be easy. I know, like, I've sat with therapists before that I can bullshit my way through for sure. Like, I know exactly what they want to hear.
Me too.
Like, you know, and so it takes a special coach, you know, or therapist or someone to be able to call that out and see that, like, you know, probably the way it comes out, like, doesn't quite land right or feel right to them. Like, you know, there's a lot of energy behind words sometimes. And so being able to, yeah, call that out in somebody and compassionately mm-hmm. get them to the place where it's like, okay, we're going to get your shit together. You know, yeah. It doesn't sound nice, but we're going to do it. Like, that's a tough skill.
Well, and I, you know what I think too, I hope this is okay, but like, so I've got people who've seen therapists for their food stuff. The therapist has a psychological background, but they don't have the scientific or the physiological education to support it. People go see trainers or nutritionists who can like micro dial in a nutrition plan, but they don't have the skill set to deal with the psychology of behavior change or self-sabotage. And for whatever reason, my path in life was so twisty-turny. Like, I hated my master's. And I'm so grateful I did it because I've been able to marry the physiology and the psychology of change. And when you have both, it makes it so much easier than just sort of shooting darts and hoping you hit a target and that you're, you know, lucky. And I always say weight loss it's not lucky, it's methodical. And once you figure out what works for you and the way you lose it and can you live this lifestyle, you're on your path to freedom. And sure, maybe it took some mm-hmm. trial and error, but you can get there, you know?
Yeah, that's huge. Like, yeah, the speciality of things, of like specializing in something, it's so isolated that you miss. Like, I know that's the same thing like in medical fields even, right? Like, you have someone who specializes in the heart, somebody who specializes in the brain, somebody who specializes in bones, right? But it's like none of those are independent of one another. They all have an impact on each other. And so it's, yeah, exactly. You have to find a way to marry those things together. And that's what makes the food information and the health and fitness industry so confusing, is because you get a lot of specialists that want to highlight and pinpoint one thing here and one thing there, but it's not talking about the whole picture. And then not to mention, I think there's also a lot of studies with that something we've talked a little bit about before, but there's a lot of studies done with men. And a lot of times those men are like in their 20s. Yeah. And then that information gets passed on to, hey, women, this is what you should do. Totally. And you're like 40 or 50.
Totally. Not the same. Yeah. Like, you know, intermittent fasting, that's not actually the awesomest mm-hmm. thing for a postmenopausal woman. It's just really not, you know. Vegan lifestyle, a lot of complications as we age. And so we have to know. But when you just, again, well, and even this is a great conversation because last night she's like, well, what about inflammation and all of the, and I'm like, listen, like what I say is tackle your biggest problem. I'm like, well, do you notice you've got a lot of inflation? She's like, no. I'm like, so what's your biggest problem right now? She's like, I can't fit into my clothes. I've got a closet full of clothes. I'm like, so you've got a closet. So your weight is your biggest problem, but you're trying to eat to deal with inflammation, which you don't even notice. She's like, mm-hmm. And then she just burst out laughing. And it's like, why don't we go after the problem you're experiencing the most distress from? And let's figure out that. And like, to really understand that eating and a way of eating you're going to optimize that over decades. Like how I eat now compared to 10 years ago, I lost the weight 10 years ago, but my body's changing. I'm getting older. My family situation's changing. And so I just feel like there's all of these there's all these tactics. Well, I'm doing this and I've gone to an inflammatory free diet and I'm off this, this, and this, but I'm still getting my potato puff Cheeto things that I eat 4 bags of every, and it's like, well, so.
Well, it's the buzzwords. It's exactly mm-hmm. right, though. It's like the buzzwords, right? That people are like, well, this is what I did, that their Instagram person, this is what I did to lose all this weight. And it's like, that may not apply to you necessarily. And yeah. I really appreciated Megan's comment about the studies being done on men mm-hmm. because hashtag hormones are real because, yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, it's not an excuse, but it's reality. And I know that everybody on this call has dealt with that. So it's, mm-hmm. and when mm-hmm. you discount that, it just makes it that much more difficult. So if you're swimming upstream, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we've all done diet, exercise. We all know what to, like you said, you mentioned what to do, and we all exercise. So I think what it comes down to is the emotional, the spiritual. We just need to journal, meditate, yoga, do something to help on the mental aspect of it all. So
yeah.
I'm sick of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just fundamental basics. Women don't love mm-hmm. protein. Men, give me a 12-ounce steak. We're not at 10 in the morning, I crave protein. We're a latte and some lemon loaf, please. Mm-hmm. So we, you know what I mean? So if somebody said to me the other day, give me your brass tacks basics for weight loss. And I was mm-hmm. get your protein in throughout the day, starting in the morning, a little bit, not a ton, because protein converts to fat, especially if you're five, if you're little. Don't just eat your dose of protein at night. That's not when we need it. Our body's repairing. So get your protein, get your water, get your vegetables. And then pay attention to if you're really hungry, physiologically hungry, or if you feel like something to eat. And you know you feel like something to eat when you go into your kitchen and you open up every cabinet, drawer, fridge, and then you go back to the cabinet, drawer, fridge, and you're just like, I don't know what I feel like. Yeah, because you're not hungry. You're feeling bored or you're feeling lonely. Go deal with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly it. It's, yeah, the reaching for things in the moment and not even knowing, what it is that you need at that time. What is this fulfilling and what am I avoiding right now? I think that's a big one that the mm-hmm. journaling can help with. I was just telling the girls, too, before this, I got a self-love workbook that we're all going to start going through, too, that's going to help bring out some of these things. One of our other, biggest episodes that we've had, though, was around the self-sabotage topic. And I know you talk about that being part of the process, but can you talk about maybe some of the more secret reasons why people are maybe afraid to start the journey or kind of deal with some of those emotion things or self-sabotage in that way?
Yeah, for sure. There's a few deeper ones that, one that came to mind instantly is sometimes we're really afraid of who we're going to be. We're afraid of the woman that we're going to become. And that can be based on either past attention you didn't want, unwanted attention, or youth. You worry that if you get to a point in your life where you're healthy, fit, feel better about yourself, you may lose friends. You may change your partner. You may not be accepted in your peer group. And that's a subconscious fear. Another one in terms of self-sabotage is it sounds so stupid, you guys, but the fear of success. It's the fear of letting your own light shine. It is the fear of, I'd rather stay in this dark little rabbit hole where I'm very safe and comfortable, even though I kind of hate it, but at least it's familiar. And that over there, yeah, I really want that, but I'm not sure what that, I don't know. And so it's easy to pull back. And, when we talk about sabotage, the actual definition of sabotage is intentionally creating acts of destruction or destructive acts so that things do not work properly. Self-sabotage is intentionally, I think, subconsciously or consciously engaging in acts or behaviors that make your life feel broken when it doesn't actually have to be. But we do it to ourselves. And that's why I had to write my second book. Diet disruption is so much a stand against the dieting industry and that there is another way to do it. We need to reframe not having as much as we want, not as deprivation, but as normal eating, right? A normal eating. And then to go, okay, there's all of this other emotional stuff. And I think women we worry that it's going to be harder than it actually is. So we make it bigger, seem like it's going to take longer. And then we avoid doing it because in our minds, it's become this Everest. And really, it's like a rolling hill. You just got to go. It's not as big as you think it is, but the mind is very powerful. And so we stay stuck.
The fear of success one, that doesn't sound stupid at all. That I'm actually working through that in therapy right now. So that one very much hits home.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think, yeah, playing small. And what, like, what does it mean for you to go all in? Like, what does it mean if you were to like fully show up for yourself, your life, your health, and then show up for your kids, your partner, your career? Like, what if we flipped this whole whacked out thing where we try to serve everybody else first and then we get our own crumbs, and instead we let them, like, I heard this, and I can't give credit because I don't remember who it was, but I was at this lecture and she said, let them drink from the saucer. Fill your own cup and keep it so full, and let everybody else, there's always going to be enough if you're full. But we get into this habit where we're praised for giving, taking care, being the caretaker, and being on the back burner of your life. I mean, it was such a slow, steady decline off my own priority list that I like had fallen off of it and didn't even realize. And so my work was in climbing that mountain back up to not go, this isn't about the weight. This is about giving myself permission to be enough. I'm enough. I am worth looking after. That was like a radical new thought for me.
Well, that's really interesting because it's like when you do put yourself last, you're just so damn tired. And that's when you're like, I don't even care. Mm-hmm. I don't even care. I'll just eat whatever I can find, or, you know, you just don't have the energy left to even care.
Totally. And those are usually the time when I always say, when you say F it and I don't care, that's actually the time you care the most, but you're the most scared, the most exhausted, the most burnt out. You've got one nerve left and somebody's like on it, you know, and that. And so self-sabotage has a whole bunch of like awful family members. It's got self-abandonment, self-betrayal, self-neglect. And all three of these things are what are the precursors to self-sabotage. Self-sabotage doesn't just happen. And so that's the problem. The fix for it is not to let your inner critic run the show, but it's self-compassion, it's self-empathy, it's learning how to create self-awareness and self-regulation. So as we start to go into sabotage and we go, oh man, yeah, I totally abandoned myself. I didn't eat all day. Oh my gosh, I'm totally engaged in self-neglect right now. Like, if you would ever treat a child you care about the way you treat yourself, the answer is probably no. You'd make sure they had water. You'd make sure they had a snack. You'd make sure they were going to bed on time. So
we laugh about that. Megan and I laugh about that with the dogs.
The way we take our dogs.
We're like, I take care of my dogs so much better.
She gets her supplements and nutrition every day. I mean, the doggy is better than I do. Like, it's, yeah, she gets her exercise and like everything is prioritized for her. Yeah. I mean, and thank God for that, because it does get me outside and it does, you know, there's benefits that I get from that too. But yeah, we laugh about that all the time. Yeah, they're living the dream. If we could only take some of that for ourselves. And we can. And we've talked about this before too, and Jen's called this out of me. It's like we confuse our own loneliness with our dog's loneliness, right? Like, I don't want to leave her for an hour to go to the gym. I feel guilty of exercising without her. I should be outside doing something with her, or, you know, things like that. Those are all the struggles that come up.
I think I've got a dog too. I've got a big St. Bernard, and like, I'm super attached to him. And the dog's like, when I leave, he's like, lifts his head, puts it back down, you know, like the dog's good. It's like, are you good though? And I just think that's where we all need to get a little braver in our life. You know, we need to get a little more courageous. We need to go, me first, you next. And it's not selfish. It's an act. It's a necessity. It's an act of like, it's a radical pivot to go me first, you that, and you next. And that's a boundary. That's love. That's self-love.
It's hard though. And I think I look at what my last, like, and I'll kind of go into this a little bit, because I think that there's some people listening who probably would appreciate it. But like, I lost my mom in August, and it was after she'd been in a nursing home for about 18 months, and about a year of that, we weren't able to see her because of COVID, and she had Alzheimer's. So like, that was the last year we were going to have with her, type of thing. And I think it's just, you get so caught up in a lot of emotions. So like the basic grief and sadness and whatnot, it's a lot deeper than that. Like, there's so much more to it than that. I mean, it was a lot of like taking care of her, taking care of dad, even though he probably didn't need to be taken care of, but feeling like, you know, you have to deal with that, and then losing her and the grief associated with that, and dealing with dad's grief. And now I do feel like it's, because there is sort of this generational, like, okay, now it's my responsibility to take care of him like she would have, and make sure that he's okay, those types of things. And, you know, finding that where your place in the world is.
Yeah, Jen, I'm sorry. It is. It's so hard. And I think the best advice I could give you as I've navigated grief is, and both. I need to take care of him and me. I need to take care of them and me, because burnout for caregivers or caretakers, I mean, where does that leave you, you know? And your mom wouldn't want you to be burnt out, stressed out, living in, you know, she wouldn't. The people that love us don't want that future for us. We create it. And then I think, you know, I know we talked, you know, for grief, I think so many people have not been able to go through a true grieving process. My dad died. He had no funeral, no celebration of life. There's nothing. There's no ceremony. There's no acknowledgement. There's no ritual around it. And so this emotion that we don't let ourselves feel and process, it gets stuck and stagnant in us, which is why we just kind of keep pushing it down. And, you know, emotion is supposed to be energy in motion. It is supposed to be something that comes through us, and that we express our anger, we cry the tears, we learn how to do it in healthy ways. I just don't know if we've been taught many healthy ways. You know, my mom drank black velvet rye and smoked cigarettes. That's how I watched her cope with pain, right? I don't want to do it like that.
And I think a lot of it too, Jen, was like the anger of not able to see her because of COVID too. So that anger of like, oh my God, if they would just let me see her and be with her that last year. Oh. Too. So that really plays a part of it too.
Well, the helplessness. And mm-hmm. I think that again goes and probably all wraps up, right? Like when you're feeling helpless, like you don't have control over the situation. And so what do I have control over? The bottle of wine and the chocolate.
Oh my God, you're not going to like what I was just about to say. Do you want to hear what I was going to say?
Sure. Good.
What we have control over is how we choose to respond. Who are we going to be?
Yeah.
How are we going to choose? And I think fully, yes, the bottle of wine, the chocolate, for yes, a bit every now, but it can't be the thing that we all, you know what I mean? Like, it's like at some point, all that has happened, we can't go back, we can't undo, we can't rewind, we can't say goodbye, we can't hold hands, we can't. And if we keep living there and we don't get into our present and go, okay, I got to choose a different response here because I'm making myself a nutcase, you know, that's me. I'm not saying you are. I've had to do this work in my own mind and be like, I've got to do something to move through this in a better way. That's when we get fully responsible, you know, and then life gets better for all the people that love us and that we love and that we have to take care of.
I love the energy and motion.
Yeah.
That it goes through you.
Go yell, go into your car. My car has, if my car had a microphone or a recording in it, oh my God, people would commit me. My car has been my saving place for a rage outlet. I'm not kidding. How do women I don't do anger well. I cry. So I take my anger and I bundle it under sadness or anxiety. That's very common. Or, you know, so women, if we don't know how to actually fully express our anger, it'll be like, yeah, you know, I'm so mad right now. Like, do I look mad, sound mad? Like,
yep.
Right? Yeah, I just can't believe this is really happening. Like, I'm so angry. Like, we're not congruent with what we say and how we feel and how we express. And as you get more congruent in that, anger is a motivating energy. It means something's not right here. Something's not right. It's a message, right? But I have screamed in my car. I've said things I would never want anyone to know I've ever said. I've yelled at, you know, just life. And then it's out of me and I can go, okay, here I go. But if I kept that energy in me, I'm snappy, bitchy, annoyed. I get grumpy easier. I'm taking it out on the people I love. You know, I'm no saint. Like, can anybody relate? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, Jen, before angry. We started recording, Jen talked about how many people she wants to punch in the face. Like,
it was like. I got put in timeout by my cousin last night. So.
Go into your car. Go into your car and yell and say to every single person that you're mad at and want to punch in the face, I want to punch you in the face. Bah! Like, let it out. In the safety and privacy, that's healthy anger response.
Yeah.
And as what
I mean, it's like a wild roller coaster ride when you do kind of like let yourself feel it and go on it. It's just like, I can think of that with like judgment or jealousy or, you know, things like that too. And it's kind of like you go on this little roller coaster where you shower fights. That's where I let mine out, I guess. Like while I'm showering, I play out arguments in my head. And I always win, of course.
Of course.
But I get to process things in there. And that's, yeah, it's kind of like this wild ride of like emotions that you're just like, ooh, okay, that was fun. Let that out.
It's so important. You know, I was mentored by Marianne Williamson this year, and it was probably the luckiest circumstance in my life. It probably helped me in so many ways. And she said something that was really powerful, and maybe listeners can benefit from it, which was with sadness. And I think that there's no doubt many of us have experienced sadness in unparalleled ways in the past 2 years. If you have 45,000 tears to cry, crying 37,000 isn't enough. And we don't let ourselves go the distance with our grief. And we go, okay, I got to get together. Okay, we get tired of crying. We get So whether it's 13,000 tiers, you can't stop at 5. You got to go the distance. And only you know what the distance is. But to keep them in and to tell yourself, oh, I don't know why this is ridiculous. I should be stronger than this. Like, you are making yourself wrong for something that needs to be expressed. Let it happen. And then it helped me anyways. Like with my best friend, she passed away in June. And I mean, there's still tears. I'm still not done. My tears, they still come. And I can't judge them, but I have to let them go. It's easy to judge. What's that
judgment of your emotions, right? Like, or mm-hmm. I'm mad because I'm mad. Now I'm mad because I'm mad. Mm-hmm. Or I feel guilty because I'm mad. Because mm-hmm. I don't really have a right to be mad or whatever.
Yeah, because you might, well, again, it might be the message you got around anger. Good girls, don't get angry. Nope, don't say anything. Nope, you should be nice and sweet and polite and kind. And don't ever say how you really feel. Just put a smile on your face and be accepted. And that's, you know, people please other people. That's how you're going to get your love, you know. I mean, there are so many implicit messages for girls, little girls, about what's acceptable with your feelings. And no, that behavior. No, you come back when you want to be nice. Oh my God, yes. We are not meant to be nice all the time. Like, so this is the work. This is what I teach and help women with. It's not, is a carrot good or bad? Because I know it's got a little bit of sugar in it, because it's like higher on the glycemic. Like, oh my God, it's carrot. It's not the issue, right? Like, it's not the carrot issue.
By the way, funny story. I was actually doing Weight Watchers when they started charging points for carrots. And it was like this epic meltdown, right? And I remember the leader at the time saying, if any one of you is in this room because of carrots, then we'll have a conversation. Yeah. But I'm guessing that carrots is not the cause of anyone's weight problem.
No.
So if you want to keep counting them as zero, keep counting them as zero.
It's not the carrots. It's not the corn.
Made me laugh so much.
Oh, yep. Yeah. You had a great leader. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. That's not the issue. So it's like the cream and the coffee. It's not your freaking issue. Like, why? Like, just drink your coffee the way you like it, and let's deal with the other things that are your issue.
That's so awesome.
It so makes me think of like the shoe conversation, right? Though, like, so in CrossFit, there was always the Reebok shoes that came out, the new Reebok shoes. And the new shoe that came out, I remember asking someone, would be like, well, what do you like about the shoes? Like, this is a really good shoe. They're like, well, it really helps me with my rope climbs. And I'm like, well, when my shoe is what is the defining factor about whether I get rope climbs or not, then I will buy those shoes. But in the meantime, I'm going to pass.
Oh my God.
Yes. But it's like looking at what the actual issue is.
So true.
So we talk about the shoes all the time.
Yeah, that comes up a lot.
I love that. I love that. Uh-huh. In our world, we talk, it's not the peas, it's not the corn, it's not the carrots, it's not the beets, it's not the banana, it's not the apples. Let's talk about what you ate between 9 and 11 last night, you know?
Yeah. The bottle of wine. And the-
yes. Yeah.
Tell me the stuff that you don't want to share with me. What's the stuff you didn't write on your food log? Like, I know there was a handful of something in there. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All the almonds. Yeah. Those are,
oh my God, Paula. Yeah. Yes, it's the nut. It's the I have a whole avocado in my smoothie every day, and then I get, you know, 2 or 3 handfuls of nuts because they're healthy, you know. So my nutritionist is like, and you're just like, oh my God, you're 5 foot two. There's no way you can have that much fat in your diet. It's like, oh, and you're trying so hard, and you're like, oh, I know. And this is where I just think, oh, mm-hmm. like, God love us. Like, and thank God we women have senses of humor. They really, yeah. right? Like, we have sense of, and we can always go, okay, I'm ready to. And it's the initial commitment to weight loss is important. But you know what's more important? The day-to-day recommitment. Mm-hmm. And I tell my clients, divide your day into quarters, just like a football game, right? Like, when they're down in the first quarter, they're not like, well, that's it. Might as well just go pack it in and just, like, go hit the showers, right? No, they get it together, they come back, and they do the second quarter. If they're down and out in the third quarter, they're not like, oh, well, let's, you know, obviously they've beat, they come back and they go, okay, let's go, game on. Mm-hmm. So divide your day into quarters. Don't slash tires. It's like, just let a mistake be a mistake, or let an oops be a, oh, okay. And then what's the next best decision you can make for yourself? That hourly or quarterly recommitment, I mean, it changes everything.
Yeah, just don't say, F it, I'll just start again tomorrow, and or start again on Monday, or...
Yeah, start
such
again.
Such a great analogy.
That is.
Such mm-hmm. a great analogy.
Yeah.
Well, especially for those of us, those of us here in Nebraska who are very football oriented, we're a fourth quarter team here, or were at one time, so that's a perfect analogy to be like, we're a fourth quarter team, guys.
Yeah.
You can turn things around. And when you go to bed proud about what you just did in that last quarter, guess how you wake up the next day?
I love that. Like,
that's great.
When you go to bed proud, you know what? Lost just a quarter. That's okay. My other three quarters, my other half was great. Tomorrow I'm going to go for three quarters, right? It's just like coaching ourselves to success. And
well, just leaves room too for like life that comes up, you know, the uncontrollable kind of chaotic stuff that like happens. And it's like, well, shit, I planned on being home for lunch and I'm not at home for lunch. So here's what the situation is. And I'm going to make the best choice in this moment with this. And then, you know, look forward to the next thing instead of being like, well, yeah, F it, and the whole day is a wash, and it just threw me off. Yeah.
That's that nasty habit of perfectionism. That's one of those other sneaky self-sabotaging things. It's, okay, totally. If I'm going to lose weight, I got to do it perfect, right? I got to be perfect. Yeah. I have to have the perfect breakfast. I have to shop, you know. Oh, I wasn't perfect, and then we just, there we go. So it's like when we divorce ourselves from perfectionism and we let it be life and all of the emotional curveballs and tsunamis that we're all going through, and we have some grace with ourselves, which isn't the same as letting yourself off the hook. It's not the same as apathy, right? It's
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah.
Some grace. Yeah. It's like, okay, let me love myself to success as opposed to punishing myself into purgatory. Like, let me just be a little kinder so I can do better.
Love it.
That's a great distinction, because I think a lot of that, we've talked about toxic positivity before too, and it's kind of like that area of, yeah, like I love my body, but I want to see some changes. But then the whole like, give yourself some grace and some compassion. And it's like, grace and compassion is not stuffing your face full of donuts on the couch like every evening or whatever. Like, that's exactly not compassion and grace. Like,
no, that's self-harm.
Confuse that.
Yeah, that's self-harm that you've just labeled self-love and you've mislabeled it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's times where, yeah, for sure, like a nap could be self-love, but, you know, there's, you got to know the boundaries and the limits on those things too, like everything in doses. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And for our moms, and well, any of our listeners out there like that, like, we would never talk to kids that way. Yeah. I taught a kids karate class this morning, and I would never talk to any of my students the way that conversations I have with myself at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're not going to get any better.
Well, and like, if you've ever tried to, you know, how many of you, like, I just always say those emotional eating episodes are the epitome of like a 2-year-old temper tantrum, but we're having them as an adult woman, you know? And it's like, you can't teach a toddler in the moment. You can't course correct them in the moment. What do? You hug them, you stay empathetic. And then afterwards, you're able to like, after, you know, you have to learn how to de-escalate things. And I think a lot of times as women, when we're in that metaphorical 2-year-old temper tantrum, we escalate it by the negative talk in our head. Oh, look at you, such a failure. Here you go again. And like, we're not soothing ourselves. We're escalating the tantrum and we do more harm, as opposed to just, oh man, it's been rough. Hey, that was like just a rough hour. You know, I got you. Right? Like, okay, I'm here. You know, be your own best friend, not your enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. How would we talk to each other in that moment? You know, try to take that route. Yeah.
Totally. Totally.
I love it. So great. Are there any other like weight loss myths or things in your work that you want to share with us, or where do you want to lead people to learn more from you?
I want to lead women to try again, right? But give up. If you have tried it and it hasn't worked for you, just like going back and dating the bad boyfriend, he's never going to get better. Stop it. Don't do that method again. Okay. It's not going to change. So it's like, learn from those experiences. And then I always say, just pivot, be like a basketball player. You're trying to get the, you know, you're trying to make the shot, pivot, and just pivot a little every day, stay consistent, find someone that you can hold true accountability with, and you'll, like, the year is going to pass anyways. You've spent years or decades doing it another way. Give yourself some permission to take time and do it in a healthy, slower way, but let it be permanent. So I always say slow weight loss is sexy weight loss, because it never comes back. And that's what people do with me. It's slow, steady. The pounds you let go of, they're not going to come back, because it's not a fake loss.
Slow is sexy. Love it.
Slow is sexy. Yes, it's the feminine way. We're not meant to rush and power through it with like some sort of gritty masculine energy. Like, that's not our nature. Slow, we need to enjoy. We need to feel confident. For many of us, we have to build our confidence back up so we can start to feel confident again. And when we slow down a little, it does get a little bit easier. I can promise you that.
I've loved this conversation, Jen. This has been amazing.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with all of you. It's such an important topic. So relatable in so many ways. Yeah. Like, thank God. Like, so. Oh, well, and then you see the 20-something nubile, like, yoga instructor who tells you just drink a green smoothie, you know, and you're like, ah! Just want to, you know, that's remember, who you want to punch, remember right?
Remember those people, yeah, I was going to say, remember those people I wanted to punch in the face?
And she's on the list.
It's just, we got to,
I don't even know her, and I want to punch her in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something where, you know, and I just think that in our 40s, 50s, like, it gets, we just, if you've gone through the hard, get help. Like, if you've gone through some hard and you know you need some help, like, just, it's the bravest thing I ever did. And I had to overcome my arrogance, my ego. I should be able to do this on my own right now. I've got 8 years of schooling. I'm an athlete, triathlete. I'm a marathoner. I should know better. Like, I had to give up a lot of who I thought I was and what I thought I could and should do on my own. And I had to get really humble. But I had to.
And you'll never stop being those things. Like, nobody can ever take those achievements away from you. It's just they take on a new meaning after you get past some of this underlying stuff. Yeah.
I didn't write a book on my own. I didn't write my, you know, I didn't produce my audiobook on my own. I didn't do my own nails. I don't color my own hair. Like, I get help for the things that I'm not good at.
Right.
So. Right. Ladies, yeah,
it's, I love that too, because I think you had, I read on your website something about, like, you struggled in English or writing in school, and here you've written several books now. And it's so funny because I had that conversation with a girl at work the other day, and I was like, you don't need the things that you think that you need to start, like, just start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, starts with a dream.
So great.
I think we underestimate the power of dreaming. This will be my final thing. I found a vision board from 2012. Again, I had probably just lost some weight. Oh, I was in the process, because there was a woman from Running World. And I cut my own face out of a photo. Remember how we printed photos back in the old days?
Yes,
so I cut my face out of a photo and I glued it on her. And then I had a bestseller list and I wrote bestseller. I didn't even know what and it took a long time for those books to come out, you know? But it started with planting a seed, planting an idea. And again, like, plant the seeds of your own dreams and then let them take some time to germinate. But don't give up on them. You got to nurture them.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Jen. We'll be sure to tag your books and website and things in our show notes and anything else that you want to lead people to. But I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us and process some of our personal things with us too, and sharing all of that with our listeners. We're just so grateful to you and the work that you do.
Aw, thank you. It's been so fun. Yeah, thank so you. Fun.
Thanks for listening to the Lost and Found Wellness Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate us, and give us a review. Then head over to Facebook and join the Lost AF community to keep the conversation going.